In the days where you could be hanged in London, from Tyburn's triple-crowned tree, for the theft of 12 pennies, the Americas became a symbol of clemency, of a second chance. But the conditions of transportation were such that for some it was easier to take the leap from the leafless and dance on nothing until the dancing was done. Transportation, it was called. For 5 years, for 10 years, for life. That was the sentence. You were sold to a captain and would ride in his ship, crowded tight as a slaver's, to the colonies or to the West Indies. Off the boat, the captain would sell you on as an indentured servant to one who would take the cost of your skin out in your labor until the years of your indenture were done. But at least you were not waiting to hang in an English prison. For in those days, prisons were places where you stayed until you were freed, transported, or hanged. You were not sentenced there for a term. And you were free to make the best of your new world. You were also free to bribe a sea captain to return you to England before the terms of your transportation were over and done. People did. And if the authorities caught you returning from transportation, if an old enemy or an old friend with a score to settle saw you and peached on you, then you were hanged without a blink. I am reminded, he continued after a short pause, during which he refilled the inkwell on his desk from the bottle of umber ink from the closet and dipped his pen once more, of the life of Essie Tregowan, who came from a chilly little cliff-top village in Cornwall, in the southwest of England, where her family had lived from time out of mind. Her father was a fisherman, and it was rumored that he was one of the wreckers, those who would hang their lamps high on the dangerous coast when the storm winds raged, luring ships onto the rocks for the goods on shipboard. Essie's mother was in service as a cook at the squire's house, and, at the age of 12, Essie began to work there, in the scullery. She was a thin little thing with wide brown eyes and dark brown hair, and she was not a hard worker, but was forever slipping off and away to listen to stories and tales, if there was anyone who would tell them. Tales of the Piskies and the Spriggans, of the black dogs of the moors and the seal women of the channel. And, though the squire laughed at such things, the kitchen folk always put out a china saucer of the creamiest milk at night, put it outside the kitchen door for the Piskies. Several years passed, and Essie was no longer a thin little thing. Now she curved and billowed like the swell of the green sea, and her brown eyes laughed and her chestnut hair tossed and curled. Essie's eyes lighted on Bartholomew, the squire's 18-year-old son, home from rugby, and she went at night to the standing stone on the edge of the woodland, and she put some bread that Bartholomew had been eating but had left unfinished on the stone, wrapped in a cut strand of her own hair. And on the very next day, Bartholomew came and talked to her, and looked on her approvingly with his own eyes, the dangerous blue of a sky when a storm is coming, while she was cleaning out the grate in his bedroom. He had such dangerous eyes, said Essie Tregowan. Soon enough, Bartholomew went up to Oxford, and when Essie's condition became apparent, she was dismissed. But the babe was stillborn, and, as a favor to Essie's mother, who was a very fine cook, the squire's wife prevailed upon her husband to return the former maiden to her former position in the scullery. Even so, Essie's love for Bartholomew had turned to hatred for his family, and within the year she took for her new beau a man from a neighboring village with a bad reputation, who went by the name of Josiah Horner. And one night, when the family slept, Essie arose in the night and unbolted the side door to let her lover in. He rifled the house while the family slept on. Suspicion immediately fell upon someone in the house, for it was apparent that someone must have opened the door, which the squire's wife distinctly remembered having bolted herself. And someone must have known where the squire kept his silver plate and the drawer in which he kept his coins and his promissory notes. Still, Essie, by resolutely denying everything, was convicted of nothing until Master Josiah Horner was caught in a chandler's in Exeter passing one of the squire's notes. The squire identified it as his, and Horner and Essie went to trial. Horner was convicted at the local assizes, and was, as the slang of the time so cruelly and so casually had it, turned off. But the judge took pity on Essie, because of her age or her chestnut hair, and he sentenced her to 7 years' transportation. She was to be transported on a ship called the Neptune, under the command of one Captain Clark. So Essie went to the Carolinas, and on the way she conceived an alliance with the selfsame captain, and prevailed upon him to return her to England with him, as his wife, and to take her to his mother's house in London, where no man knew her. The journey back, when the human cargo had been exchanged for cotton and tobacco, was a peaceful time and a happy one for the captain and his new bride, who were as two lovebirds or courting butterflies, unable to cease from touching each other or giving each other little gifts and endearments. When they reached London, Captain Clark lodged Essie with his mother, who treated her in all ways as her son's new wife. 8 weeks later, the Neptune set sail again, and the pretty young bride with the chestnut hair waved her husband goodbye from dockside. Then she returned to her mother-in-law's house, where, the old woman being absent, Essie helped herself to a length of silk, several gold coins, and a silver pot in which the old woman kept her buttons. And pocketing these things, Essie vanished into the stews of London. Over the following 2 years, Essie became an accomplished shoplifter, her wide skirts capable of concealing a multitude of sins, consisting chiefly of stolen bolts of silk and lace, and she lived life to the full. Essie gave thanks for her escapes from her vicissitudes to all the creatures that she had been told of as a child, to the Piskies, whose influence she was certain extended as far as London. And she would put a wooden bowl of milk on a window ledge each night, although her friends laughed at her. But she had the last laugh, as her friends got the pox or the clap, and Essie remained in the peak of health. She was a year shy of her 20th birthday, when fate dealt her an ill blow. She sat in the Crossed Forks Inn, off Fleet Street, in Bell Yard, when she saw a young man enter and seat himself near the fireplace, fresh down from the university. "Oh-ho! A pigeon ripe for the plucking," thinks Essie to herself. And she sits next to him and tells him what a fine young man he is, and with one hand she begins to stroke his knee, while her other hand more carefully goes in search of his pocket watch. And then he looked her full in the face, and her heart leapt and sank, as eyes the dangerous blue of the summer sky before a storm gazed back into hers, and Master Bartholomew said her name. She was taken to Newgate, and charged with returning from transportation. Found guilty, Essie shocked no one by pleading her belly, although the town matrons who assessed such claims, which were usually spurious, were surprised when they were forced to agree that Essie was, indeed, with child, although who the father was, Essie declined to say. Her sentence of death was once more commuted to transportation, this time for life. She rode out this time on the Sea Maiden. There were 200 transportees on that ship, packed into the hold like so many fat hogs on their way to market. Fluxes and fevers ran rampant. There was scarcely room to sit, let alone to lie down. A woman died in childbirth in the back of the hold, and the people being pushed in too tightly to pass her body forward, she and the infant were forced out of a small porthole in the back directly into the choppy grey sea. Essie was 8 months gone, and it was a wonder she kept the baby. But keep it she did. In her life ever after, she would have nightmares of her time in that hold, and she would wake up screaming with the taste and stench of the place in her throat. The Sea Maiden landed at Norfolk in Virginia, and Essie's indenture was bought by a small planter, a tobacco farmer named John Richardson, for his wife had died of the childbirth fever a week after giving birth to his daughter, and he had need of a wet nurse and a maid of all work upon his small holding.